Well, there is a battle royale underway at the High Court in Dublin at the minute. Two mega, mega rich men are fighting for control of some of Ireland's best farmland. But what's behind this clash between John Magnier and Maurice Regan? And who are they? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And with me here in the podcast HQ is Niall Sargent. And Niall is current affairs correspondent with The Currency, who've done vast amounts of reporting on this fascinating case. Hello, Niall. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
I think we need to start before we go to the clash and to the issue that's actually central to this case, which is currently before the High Court, by looking at these individuals, because maybe people don't know who they are. So let's look at the parties who are involved. Let's start with John Magnier. I think people will know his name. One of Ireland's richest people. Tell me more about him and his pastimes, his hobbies, his background, and how he's created all of his wealth.
Yeah, I think people would know, or mostly associate him. Obviously, we've used the expression, many have the bloodstock billionaire in the family, but people don't necessarily know too much of the origins. So the family would be from East Cork near Fermoy in the countryside, and does have a farming background, but as well on the horse rearing side of it, I think. So his father would have had a very successful dairy enterprise, but they also had Castlehyde Stud as a site. So that was kind of the secondary to the dairy. Obviously things have very shifted now with John Magnier. So his father, unfortunately quite suddenly in the early 60s, he died quite early. He was in his early 50s, I think. So John Magnier was taken out of school at the age of 15 to take over operations on the family farm. The interest he had was obviously more on the horse breeding side, and he had quite a knack for it, quite an interest, and he was very, very good at it. This was seen by Vincent O'Brien, renowned horse trainer in Tipperary, who would have had the Ballydoyle Stud there. So he would have been family friends with the Magnier, saw this talent in John Magnier, and when he took a stake in Coolmore Stud in the early 70s, brought John Magnier in to manage the stud operations. They got involved then with a British millionaire, getting a bit more money behind it. And that helped to sort of revolutionise not just Coolmore, but how the horse rearing operations were done in Ireland and probably globally as well, and turned it into that powerhouse it is now. So I think it's good to say Coolmore, it's not just a powerhouse in Ireland, internationally as well. I mean, it is really renowned stud for what they did in transforming it. So they brought together essentially the bloodstock side, the rearing side with the horse racing. So they changed the system of not just breeding and then selling on, actually creating their own, training them up, creating champions and having this fantastic bloodline of stallions for future. And then getting into actually people bringing their mares into them every year and making a lot of money. An individual, for a mare to come in individually, you're talking maybe hundreds of thousands. They're doing a lot of business, those stallions, every year. So it's making a lot of money. So they've really transformed it. And then, of course, when the money's come in, very good investments from the Magnier family in real estate, other areas. They had a stake in Manchester United at some point. Obviously, you know, relations with Alex Ferguson were fairly heavily in the media at the time, and built up the empire now that is the Magnier family and the Coolmore Empire.
And what's also interesting is that John Magnier actually married Vincent O'Brien's daughter, Susan.
So yeah, that's his wife. So there's a love story entangled in there as well. So that shift has really put him in that very elite club. I think taking the Coolmore operations into account, different estimates, but you're looking in obviously in the billions. And it was quite an interesting moment during the Barron estate case, which we're going to talk about, when he was asked, I think, if through Coolmore he would place himself in, let's say, the three commas, the billionaire club. And he said, I would hope so.
He's tax resident, isn't he, in Switzerland? Do we have any idea of the wealth?
It's very difficult to know. That's the latest estimate I've seen, around five billion. But you're talking about with the Coolmore, with all the investments in the UK. And here there's property investments and there's investments in stocks. So there's over the years. So it's wide ranging. And probably John Magnier himself wouldn't entirely know, because he said very clearly in the Barron estate that he has legal people to take care of all of these things. And his love is really in the farming and the rearing side of things.
We get a sense, though, of their wealth when you look at their philanthropy through the John and Susan Magnier Foundation.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's wide ranging, all the activities they do. And as well, the amount of money aside from that, I mean, there's obviously what we've discussed and what I wrote about last week on the land holdings of the Coolmore Stud and the Magnier family. It's quite extensive, over 10,000, probably nearly 11,000 acres. But some of that is for land for workers at Coolmore. So you're talking about 1,300 workers as well in Coolmore. So alongside the philanthropic, they do quite a lot for the local economy and keeping people there, because it's quite an intensive industry. It's not like farming per se, where in some instances it could be part-time or it's not that intensive to look after certain animals. With the bloodstock, it's very, very intensive. So it's quite a good bit of employment in South Tip.
I thought was also quite interesting was to look at some of the artworks that the Magner family has loaned to national galleries here in Ireland. I think it's an indication of their wealth too, isn't it?
Yeah, they've built up a fantastic art portfolio. I don't know the full range of it, but you see different articles every year on what some of the pieces that he's built up.
Okay, we've established there's plenty of money here and an extremely successful stud in Coolmore. You also, through your work at the Currency, took a look at the land holdings in the Tipperary area and beyond. I mean, John Magner himself and his children, when they took the stand in the High Court, said they couldn't really put a figure on the amount of land that they own. But you estimate, through themselves, through the stud, through other companies, family members, that it's around 11,000.
Yeah. That's the truth that we came to about that. There's been other publications before who've kind of touched on similar numbers, maybe 9,000-10,000 acres over the years. But we looked directly at the land folio records, planning files to sort of piece this together. It was quite interesting when I think it was JP's son who was on the stand, and David Wachman as well, his son-in-law, when they were asked about, as you said, they were asked about the land holdings. They didn't have a firm figure on what was presented to them, what was in their name. But I think on the side of the Barn Estate holders, it was asked, well, we could read out the folios for you now in court if you want and go one by one. And I think then the answer was, well, okay, if they're in the folios, if that's what you're saying, that's probably correct. So
it would take quite a bit of time down at the High Court, cost quite a bit of money.
A lot of
go through the folios. And in fairness, they've said, look, this isn't something we've just acquired overnight. We have been building this landmass over a 60-year period.
Built up over 60. And as well, that includes, so they include Coolmore. Obviously, Vincent O'Brien would have been involved with that. Also, Ballydoyle, which would have been his stud. So obviously, that's been inherited into the family. And then you can see pockets of land in other studs. They've kind of expanded out and built up over time, because you're talking about 2,000 horses going through on the land at any given time, essentially. So they require a lot of space. It's not like cattle or sheep, which can be quite compacted. They need the space to roam. They also need space for biosecurity reasons. These are incredibly expensive, high-profile caliber stallions, and they need their space. There cannot be disease spread among, so the land is quite spread out. Then you need a lot of the land is tillage land as well, because they obviously need to eat as well, and they need bedding. I think there's about 40,000 bales of straw for bedding alone every year going to Coolmore. So there's a lot, but beyond just that side of it, they are expanding out a bit. There is one parcel of land which is for developing houses on a small estate, and there's also one that they would have bought last year, quite a large holding, over 500 acres, for a solar farm. So that will help bring down the emissions on the side of Coolmore. So they're expanding out as well, but most of it is for bloodstock.
And for those who are familiar with horse racing, Niall, these names are going to mean something. And even if you're not familiar with horse racing, you're probably going to recognise legendary stallions like Sadler's Wells, Galileo, Dane Hill, No Nay Never, and Wooten Bassett. Just some of the horses that have gone through and are going through Coolmore. These are mega stars, mega stallions.
I'm from near Punchestown, but I'm not into horse racing at all. But reading through some of the names, I was like, oh God, like of course, everyone has heard of these, and that's where they really made their name. That was the focus. So it was a very strong business model, a very strong enterprise, and that's how they've got themselves to where they are today.
Okay, there is a second character involved and who is mentioned a lot in these proceedings down at the High Court, but he's actually not a party to the proceedings, which is very interesting. His name is Maurice Regan. I don't think people will be as familiar with him. He's born in Kerry but resides in the US and built his empire really there. Tell me about this guy.
Yes, so he would have moved to the US and then in the 90s built up his own construction enterprise, which, you know, like focused in New York, but now it is national. So it's one of the biggest construction contract companies in the US. They do a lot of business, and he has, obviously with the Irish roots, he's invested quite a lot back into Ireland. He's probably most well known here for his investments in the Mercantile Group. So the hotels, the bars like and cafes like Café Onsen, the George, others would be in that stable. They've the Mercantile Hotel, which just reopened last month, beautiful renovation, millions pumped into that. So that's what he'd be most well known for. But there's other investments in Kerry, where his family would be from. and then in Tipperary. So this is where the whole, let's say, the clash comes from. He would have invested in Newtown Anner Stud, built that up, and the land around there originally for his father, actually. That was the idea, to buy the stud for his father, who has great interest in horse racing. And he has really taken it on. He's pumped millions into it to build it up over the years. And he himself has been slowly building up his landholding, nowhere near the Magnier or Coolmore level. He has about 1,000 acres of land.
Talk to me about Newtown Anner Stud. This is another palatial pad.
Yeah, well, it's lovely.
Would you like to live there, Niall?
One day, maybe. But no, it's really lovely. Like, there is, and some parts of it, you wouldn't necessarily think you're going to get into this beautiful mansion. It's an old, one of the areas of it, because it's different sort of areas joined up together in Newtown Anner. It's an, one of the entrances is an old rusty gate, essentially. You need to get out and open yourself. But behind that's what's Newtown Anner Castle, which is a lovely home with kind of, it isn't quite a castle, but it has the features of it that I think would have originally been bought for I think Maurice Regan's father in the family. But Maurice Regan also built himself a beautiful house on the land, which very clearly mimicked the Newtown Anner house, which is a lovely 18th century country mansion there. Beautiful views over to into the mountains, streams, everything. Really, really, really beautiful. And I think at the time when that was built, the planning files, I think the planner was quite amazed by it. It was, I think, the biggest house built in quite some time in Ireland, with great ambition, mimicking those beautiful homes. So
he's looking to become a bigger player in the bloodstock fields.
Yes.
And he has invested nearly 50 million in this, hasn't he already?
Yeah, invested quite a lot over the last decade or so. You can see in the company accounts every year he's pumping more money into it. I don't think he has the same ambition to get to where the Magniers are at. I think what I've been hearing is the barn would kind of be the last template piece for him, and they would probably call it somewhere around there just to support that extension of the stud, which is going through planning at the moment. But it would be a fairly substantial holding to add.
And just to be clear, as you said, if you want to develop bloodstock and you want to develop this business, you need land.
Yeah,
it goes hand in hand. It's actually, it's almost a non-negotiable,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, you need the space.
Okay, so he's not a party to the proceedings, but the proceedings are based on Barn Estate. So what is Barn Estate, and who actually owns Barn Estate?
Yeah, so probably it's good to put in context when we're talking about these big holdings. An average farm is, I think, about 80 acres. Think about as well, driving through the countryside, if you see those plots of land with a big, maybe Mac Mansion, those five-story or five-bedroom houses in the countryside, that with a nice garden, that plot is probably half an acre. So we're talking about quite substantial holdings. So
you can go actually and Google Barn Estate, and there's this fabulous photograph that comes up of this really old country,
palatial
manor
in the 1800s,
and with a beautiful garden.
Yes,
is it on a river?
Lovely views as well. So it's good for both sides. Fantastic tillage land. So that's the main thing that they are interested in, rather than, let's say, the house itself. So the house is currently owned in a trust to a family. So the Thompson Moores would be the family couple who live there at the moment. It would be the Thompson Moores, one of the sisters as well, would also be involved. And then there's other family members through a trust, which is in Jersey. So it's been in the family for generations. The fact that Thompson Moore's living, the family living there now, the plan is to move back to Australia because there's family relations over there. One of their child, unfortunately, is quite ill. So the idea is to get better healthcare for the child there. So they do want to move, you know, there's more family connections, let's say, over in Australia, which would give them the support. So they're obviously looking to sell. And this is where the whole issue developed over the last few years. I personally can't remember what I was doing on the 22nd of August, 2023. But through this court case, I think everyone in the country knows where John Magnier was at that time.
I remember the 22nd of August, 2023, because that's my mother's birthday.
Okay.
So that date actually does stand out for me. But it also stands out, as you say, for some other individuals in this country who are at the heart, the centre of this case. So what is the dispute here then, Niall? Can you summarise for me what is before the High Courts here? What is the dispute?
So the dispute is really based on a handshake agreement to sell the land to John Magnier from the trust or the family, the Thompson Moores, who would currently be residing and owning the land that would go back in the family for generations. So the Magnier's argument is that there was a handshake agreement to sell it on the night of August 22nd, 2023. And then obviously after the handshake, things will be finalised. From the Thompson Moore side, there is a trust involved as well for the family, which is based in Jersey, and they Their argument is they very clearly had to go back and get their agreement before any finalised sale could be agreed. That's their position. They got a higher offer from Maurice Regan's side. So John Magnier was 15 million, Maurice Regan was 22.5, and that is obviously the offer that they would have preferred and accepted. So that's the crux of the case, all down to this handshake agreement. Was it binding? Was that enough to say that this was the sale agreed? And really, that's the crux of it and what the court is going to decide on.
So the court is going to decide whether or not the Thompson Moores have to sell to John Magnier or continue with the sale to Maurice Regan.
That's essentially it.
And this was a conversation we've heard in evidence literally around the kitchen table.
Oh, yeah. Around the kitchen table, I think that they stayed for dinner afterwards with John and Sue. And then from there, the idea was that discussions would be held. There were obviously, you can see from the evidence before the court, from legal experts and in the documents presented, there were legal discussions ongoing. And in the background, then there was interest also from Maurice Regan. And then the agreement was made with Maurice Regan for a 22.5 million sale of the land. So that's where we're at now, and that's been contested through the courts. It's been hearings on and off for the last month or so. There's probably another week or so in it, and probably I think people are waiting for who should be the last witness to be called, which will be Maurice Regan himself, to hear his side of the story. That is the crux of the case. It is really, was that handshake and what agreements were put in place binding in some way or shape or form? And that's obviously what the courts are going to decide. And if not, then the deal should be able to proceed for Maurice Regan to buy the land.
John Magnier has taken to the stand, some of his children, some of his business advisors, the Thompson Moores have taken to the stand. There will be other legal experts, conveyancing experts, landlord experts, and now Maurice Regan himself, even though he isn't a party, will be expected to take to the stand too.
Yeah. Which I think will be quite interesting, because so far he hasn't been able to present his side of that. There's been some days, I think, in the court where, like you said, with conveyance experts and legal experts, where it's been quite a bit, let's say, boring and dry, and maybe not for the general public. But there's been other days when you have John Magnier and the family members and members of Coolmore, the stud enterprise, before the court. It's been quite interesting, some of the issues.
As these phenomenally wealthy men buy up this agricultural land, what effect is it having on land prices in that area?
They're very high. That's certainly, and it is a part of the parcel of the impact on land prices. Tipperary has one of the most expensive, I think, after Waterford, maybe in the country. It's been increasing over time, especially for good agricultural land, which, you know, for bloodstock, you need that. There is a lot of dairy interest in South Tipperary as well. So most of the land would be bought up by dairy farmers, it is fair to say. There's also outside investors who might be coming in, some of them, you know, who would have come from family farming backgrounds, who want to get back in, part-time farming on the farm, while also, you know, keeping their business enterprises intact. So the bloodstock is one part of it. I think the most interesting element on the horse racing and horse breeding side of things is those involved would have quite deep pockets, that if something is gone for private auction or public auction, private auction in particular, it's going to be very tough for farmers to get involved. But even with the private, they don't have as deep pockets that they can go in. So normally a farmer would need to apply for a loan, have that all sort of sorted out, where it's quite easy for individuals who have a lot of money to maybe just buy up the land. I don't think they have a full role in the land prices going up, but it's definitely is a factor at play. I think John Magnier will argue they do buy quite larger parcels of land. You can see they go in maybe 200, 300, 400, 500 acres in many places, often those big sort of 18th century palatial home, countryside manors. But there's also an argument to the other side of, well, some of those land plots are sold in parcels, smaller plots, or could be divided up, that some farmers locally might have an interest in just to keep their farm going. So there is certainly a tension there. But they've built it up over decades would be another argument. But there is definitely, within some quarters, a bit of tension there between, let's say, the more traditional farming side and then the bloodstock side of things.
So if you and I want to compete in the bloodstock business, we'd want to win the Euro Millions?
Maybe a few times.
It'll be a start. Niall Sargeant, thank you so much for being my guest today on News Talk Daily. And you can follow Niall's work on thecurrency.news. And I recommend that you do go on that website. It's really fascinating. Well, that's it from today's News Talk Daily. There are plenty more episodes you can listen to in the Go Loud player if you're in the market for a 20-minute deep dive into a story. You might want to check out our exploration of why Ireland's become the go-to importation site for the world's biggest drug cartels, or behind-the-scenes look at Australia's bizarre mushroom murder trial, or even visit the glamorous, if occasionally cruel, world of Formula One motor racing. But for now, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.